The premise of the book is the excuses that we hold on to. So how our experiences as a child dictate the way that we see the world, how the things that we've chosen to focus on in our life dictate what we think we're capable of, the success we think we can achieve, and how easily it is for us to store our excuses in this readily accessible box that whenever we start pushing ourselves too much, we can grab one and remind ourselves why we're not capable of complete success. So I walk through four different stages in the book of this cycle that I think we all go through multiple times in our life, which is fi trying to figure out who we are, challenging our identity of who it is we think we are, and then dealing with the excuses that come up when we start to challenge that identity.
Fear stops us from achieving our true greatness. Are you a professional woman who is feeling stuck, unmotivated, or burned out? Are you worried about your wellness? Are you letting fear stop you from crushing your goals? If you answered yes to any or all of these, then this is the podcast for you. Dr. Charmaine Gregory, night shift emergency physician, burnout thriver, and wellness champion, along with everyday heroes just like you, will explore how to face fear in our lives and emerge victoriously.
Dr. Gregory here. Did you know that I'm on YouTube as well? You can find me at Charmaine Gregory MD. See you there.
Hello, 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 Fearless Freedom Tribe. This is Dr. G, and we are back for another episode of the Fearless Freedom with Dr. G podcast. Today, we have Amber Fairman with us, and she's going to tell us all about herself and all of the incredible things that she is up to. Take it away, Amber.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks so much for having me. First of all, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
We are glad to have you.
Awesome. So I'm not sure where you want me to start. Where do we want to go, first of all?
It's up to you. You could tell us the beginning, you could tell us the middle, you could tell the end of the story, however you want to tell us.
I mean, I'll just start, I guess, and you can tell me where you want to go from there. Is that
sure?
Does it work?
Yeah,
okay.
That works.
All right. So I'm in Las Vegas. I practice criminal defense and immigration here. I'm an attorney. I also help individuals who are doing career changes. I'm a success architect. I host a podcast called More Than Corporate. No, it's not called More Than Corporate. We just rebranded it. It's called Break Your Bullshit Box. Okay. I just published my first book in August. Yeah, so that's kind of a little bit about who I am.
Okay, so now you got to tell us, how did you even get into immigration? Because that is very, that's a niche, you know, that's like not a typical, I graduated from law school and then go into immigration. That's not typical. So you got to tell us how that happened.
It was accidental and unintended. I went to law school thinking I was going to be a public defender. I focused on criminal law. My advisor was a federal public defender who worked with individuals that were on death row. So my goal when I went to law school, as I went through law school and started planning my career, was to focus on public defense for capital cases. So anybody facing life in prison or death penalty cases. And the public defender's office here in Vegas is incredibly competitive. So okay. I ended up taking a job while I was waiting for an opportunity for the public defender's office to open up. And I ended up in immigration law.
Wow. And then obviously you stayed there. So something about it must have attracted you.
I mean, it chased me. I tried to leave multiple times.
Oh, really?
It's okay, definitely fair. One of those things that once you learn and once you get a reputation for being good at, that it's a high demand because not very many people do it and do it well.
I believe that, you know, because I'm sure there are a lot of cases that need attention that don't get it because their availability is just not there of people who are able to like make it happen.
It's different too, because in the criminal system, you're entitled to have an attorney. So if you can't afford to hire an attorney, the court's required to provide one for you, which is where public defenders come from. That same right doesn't exist in the immigration system. So if you can't afford to hire an attorney, you represent yourself. And it's incredibly intimidating for attorneys, let alone somebody who has no idea what they're doing and their life is on the line.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, I thank you for that, because as an immigrant who benefited from an immigration lawyer, I am grateful for you guys.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And congratulations on your immigration story.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it's been many years now, but yes, thank you. And so tell me about so this is something that you were kind of voluntold into, right? Was there any fear involved with that?
Yeah, there was a ton of fear involved. I feel like my entire life has been fear. I grew up in a super, super small town in Idaho, and I didn't realize until after I had done the healing work that I was meant to do that I came from a very fear-based environment. Maybe fear is the wrong word, a very risk-averse environment. My mom encouraged me to get a government job, to retire with a pension and work for whoever I could that would support me. And that just was not my life plan or purpose. So I went to law school and she thought I was going to have the nice government job finally. And that lasted for, I've been practicing for 12 years now, but I started working to get out of it about 5 years ago. And as of last year, I've officially closed my law firm as far as staffing and things to that effect. So I still take some cases that I can handle on my own. And the majority of the work that I do is in the coaching, training, and speaking space. I think that fear is a huge part of any of those transitions. We have no guarantee that anything's going to work out. We have no guarantee that we're even going to like what we do. And I feel like this is one of the most frustrating parts of growing up in our society is like, you're expected to just have this understanding of what it is that you want to be when you grow up, when you're like seven. And, you know, I can remember people asking, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? And I never had an answer. It isn't until now at the age of 41 that I've realized that you don't have to commit to a singular life, that you can do what fuels your purpose now. And if that changes in 2, 3, 4 years, you can do that as well. And you best be prepared for the fear that comes along with a career change and starting over and becoming somebody new in order to make that happen. But that's what makes it exciting.
Wow. So it's so fascinating that you mentioned that you were raised in a risk-averse environment, but yet you have taught yourself to take risks.
Yeah.
Right? Because you took some risks there. I would say that some of the things that you mentioned.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't natural. At least I didn't think it was. My mom and I were having this conversation a couple of years ago because my mom is very risk averse and my dad was definitely not. My dad owned his own construction company. My grandma owned multiple businesses. And I never really connected the dots as far as entrepreneurship with them. By the time I had considered opening my own business, both of them were gone. And so I wasn't able to have conversations with them. What really pushed me over the edge was realizing that the false sense of security that comes along with working for somebody else is exactly that. I mean, false. And I think that we saw this happen so much during COVID. We convince ourselves that just because somebody else is paying our paycheck, that that paycheck is guaranteed and stable and secure. And businesses go out of business all the time and they lay people off all the time. And for me, it was, even if that wasn't a reality, the perception of that being a possibility was enough to shake that false sense of security that comes from a W-2 job. And I happened to push myself into a group of people that were incredibly supportive and helped make sure that I set everything up properly. So I've had a lot of ups and downs along the entrepreneurial journey. My first business was opened in 2017, and I've had a great circle of people around me to make sure that those ups and downs were as painless as possible.
Well, that's good, because there's plenty of ups and downs in entrepreneurship. That is for certain.
Ain't that the truth? I feel like that's the definition of what it is.
Oh yeah. There's no question. You talk to anybody, they'll tell you the same thing. And so that's good that you have found a tribe, because that's very important. You know, I don't know if your grandma ever said this, but like my grandmother used to always be like, listen, whoever your company is that you keep, that's who it tells where you're going and who you are. So, and so if you are surrounding yourself with people who are going to be able to mentor you through the journey, then that's amazing, because that's going to help you to have success.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I am sure that my grandma said something like that to me at some point in time. I feel like I spent the majority of my life in survival mode as an adult. My dad was killed in a work-related accident when I was 18. And the majority of what I know as entering the workforce up until about 5 years ago, I feel like was survival mode. And we get so comfortable in survival mode that we don't realize we're there. So many of the memories that I have of conversations with my grandma were through the lens of trying to survive, not trying to grow and
I
be
see.
Something special.
Wow, wow. Sorry to hear about your dad. That's horrible.
Thank you. Thank you. It was definitely a pivotal moment in my life, for sure.
I believe that. There's no doubt about that. Wow. And so it sounds like you had to overcome quite a bit then, because I mean, at 18, were you just getting into college, or were you still a senior in high school?
No, I graduated college at 17 and I graduated high school at 17, moved to college. So I was at the end of my first year of college when my dad passed away.
Wow. That's tough. But yeah, that's very hard. Wow. But you know, it's, the thing about that is that, you know, when we have a loved one that is ill, for example, and there is a timeline, and we have like, we know that they're going to be crossing over, that's different than when we are not expecting it. So I know that you probably had to go through some therapy or some kind of work with that. So hopefully,
yeah, I mean, and I got to see it both ways. Unfortunately, I've experienced a lot of loss in my life, starting from the age of 7. And that's part of my story, is that, you know, I was super close with my cousin. He committed suicide when I was 7 years old.
Oh no.
My uncle committed suicide when I was 14. Between the ages of 7 and 18, I went to 10 funerals. My grandma died in 2009. My grandma was sick with cancer. So the last, I would say about 6 months of her life was in a hospital bed. And, you know, when my dad passed away so suddenly, I used to wonder, like, would it have been better if I could say goodbye? And then I got the opportunity to watch my grandma just wither away. And there's just no good way to say goodbye to somebody, whether you ever get that opportunity or not. And, you know, I got slapped upside the head with a statement from somebody, a songwriter that I was watching, had made a comment that he had been asked on a show if he could go back and have a conversation with anybody at any time in his life, who would he want to talk to? And his answer was, I wish I could go back and listen to all the things my dad said when I wasn't listening. And that's how I feel about both my dad and my grandma. They were both full of so much wisdom. And I know that we had incredible experiences together. I also know that I was young. And when we're 16, 17, 18, we think we know it all. And we think we have an entire lifetime to make up for the time. And so I know I also wasn't present for the conversations that we were having. So it's definitely a goal of mine to be present in every conversation that I'm in, because I know firsthand, you just never know whether that's going to be your last one.
No, these are wise words. Absolutely. Well, what
I'm
songwriter
sorry.
was that? No, I said these are wise words that you're
Thank
saying.
you.
Yes.
Thank
Oh
you.
my goodness. And so, you know, just to like change it up a little bit. So you had this obstacle to overcome. You did so quite nicely. And then you you started your first business. Doesn't sound like things went as planned with that in 2017. And
Yeah.
then you stuck with it though, because you started a second one, right?
Yeah, my business was pretty smooth in 2017. I mean, I was ready to walk away from the law. It hadn't provided me what I thought it was going to. I had been practicing for 5 years at that point, and I was unhappy. I thought that there was this level of success I was going to get to that was going to make everything worth it and take all the pain away. I still hadn't gone to therapy. I hadn't processed my dad's death. I hadn't talked to anybody about it. I had never gone to grief counseling. So for 15 years, I just carried all of that pain with me and walked along thinking as soon as I had enough success, then it wouldn't hurt anymore. So as I was at the top of my legal career and I still was in so much pain, I didn't know which way was up and which way was down. I wanted to hit the reset button and kind of start all over. So I was going to go back to bartending, figure out where I went wrong, find another career. And someone advised that I should open my own law firm and convinced me I had nothing to lose. And they were right. So I opened my law firm and never looked back. I've been incredibly blessed to be successful in that endeavor. I had $1,200 in my checking account when I opened my business.
Wow.
Really shitty credit. So not able to get like a line of credit. Everything that I built was built with cash only, and I was successful. Then when I opened the second business, that became successful as well. And I think it's just a willingness to dig in and work to overcome. I mean, failure is just not an option. And I think after being self-employed or owning your own business isn't for everybody. For me, though, the moment that I got the taste of complete freedom over how I spend my time, I knew that I could never work for somebody ever again. So for me, it's, you know, pick your pain. Is it a struggle to build your business sometimes? Absolutely. Is it uncomfortable to make the sales calls and be responsible for the payroll? And is there stress that comes along with all of that? Absolutely. And is it better than having somebody tell you that you've got to work from certain hours? In my opinion. So I choose when I work, I choose when I don't. I wouldn't give that up for anything.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And then now you've gotten to the point where you've actually written a book. Now, is this a memoir or what kind of book is this?
It turned into more of a memoir than I expected it to be.
Okay.
It's called Break Your Bullshit Box. And the premise of the book is the excuses that we hold on to. So how our experiences as a child dictate the way that we see the world, how the things that we've chosen to focus on in our life dictate what we think we're capable of, the success we think we can achieve, and how easily it is for us to store our excuses in this readily accessible box that whenever we start pushing ourselves too much, we can grab one and remind ourselves why we're not capable of complete success. So I walk through four different stages in the book of this cycle that I think we all go through multiple times in our life, which is trying to figure out who we are, challenging our identity of who it is we think we are, and then dealing with the excuses that come up when we start to challenge that identity, then being willing to make a plan to get us to the next step, and then having the courage to execute that plan. And every time we do that, we operate at a higher level, which gives us a new identity, which creates new excuses, which requires a new plan, which requires more courage. And it's this never-ending cycle. So as I dug into the ways that people could overcome their excuses, it was just natural to share and rely on my experiences in the book. So it is very personal. I share a lot of myself in it. It wasn't intended to be, here's my story. Right. It was more intended to be, here's the way that I've created the life that I have and how you can too.
Got it. Okay. And the book has already been released, or?
It has. It's available on Amazon. It's the audiobook is being recorded now. So that should be available within the next 30 days or so. But the Kindle and the physical copy are available for purchase on Amazon.
Awesome. 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 And then you got to tell everybody how they can reach out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best way to contact me would be either to go to the website, which is successdevelopmentsolutions.com. All of the links to the Facebook group, the podcast, a link to my calendar, all of that stuff is listed there. If you're on Facebook, I do have a free Facebook group. It's called the Break Your Bullshit Box Community. You can request to join that. We do some networking calls every single month. We share some resources for how you can overcome what's going on in your life and get rid of your excuses. And it's a pretty supportive group of people.
Awesome. 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 No, that's great. And then what would you say as as you're looking at this year that we're in right now, the new one, are there any fears that you're having to face this year?
Oh, absolutely. Moving forward? I mean, I closed the law firm June of last year and went all in on the coaching and speaking and the author and all of that stuff. And so growing that to the level that I want it to be, I mean, I have a goal to have a $7 million business, or I'm sorry, seven figure business by the end of the year. So $1 million by the end of the year in my coaching business. And that definitely brings up some fears.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's good. You have big, big, big goals means that you're going to get it. Yeah, you're going to hit it.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome.
Thank you.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay. And then so we are, we're at that part of the show where we have our tradition, and that is the fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
I love it.
Okay. Awesome. Yep. The first one is, if I am fearless, I will
conquer the world.
Okay. Nice. The next one is, to me, fearless freedom means.
Fearless freedom means the ability to show up authentically as myself in every environment that I'm in and allow others to do the same.
Cool. And then the last one is, my battle cry is.
Oh, wow. I'll share a quote for you with you because it's where I live. If you haven't, are you familiar with Brené Brown?
Yes, definitely. Okay.
So Brené Brown has a TED Talk, and a couple of them. In her TED Talk, it's not your critics that count. She has a quote that says, if you're not also in the arena getting your ass kicked, I'm in no way interested in your opinion. And as I started to walk away from the legal industry and start to build a name for myself in the speaking industry, I got called crazy in every way possible. And I had to hold on to the fact that if you're not also out there transforming yourself every single day and showing up the best way that you possibly can for yourself and others, then what you think of my choices mean nothing to me.
Love it. Oh, that's good. Yeah, no, that's really important. And Brené always hits the nail right on the head, you know, with what she says. She talks a lot about fear too and conquering it.
She does. She was pretty incredible. She was pivotal in my growth journey. As I was in my rock bottom and went to therapy for the first time, my therapist gave me her TED Talk to listen to, and it was my introduction to her. And her TED Talk is something that would run on repeat throughout my days because it would pull me out of panic and anxiety attacks. And it's just become a base of everything that I believe.
Awesome. Well, that's a good belief stance to have, I think. She's pretty much, she's a badass.
Yeah, she is.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Amber, for
Thank you
your
for having me.
time. And we appreciate you sharing and being vulnerable. I know that's not easy to talk about things that are painful for you, but we appreciate it. And we appreciate you sharing that side of you. And we're looking for and rooting for your success. And we know that you're going to hit that mark, that seven-figure mark by the end of the year. So there you go. We're
Thank
manifesting it for
you.
you. So putting it out in the universe, and she always answers. So there you go.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on the show. It's been a great pleasure.